This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hello and welcome to the latest in LGBTIQ plus health and policy, the podcast that brings you conversations with leading voices in LGBTIQ plus health and well-being. I'm your host, Triana Butler, and in this episode of the latest, we're joined by a true trailblazer in queer publishing and art, Tiger Salmon. Back in 1988, Tiger co-founded Wicked Women, Australia's first erotic zine for lesbians and trans people. It was groundbreaking. It provided visibility and community at a time when queer representation was very, very scarce. And now, more than three decades later, Tiger is continuing to connect generations through their work. They have their recent exhibition, Wicked Reboot, that restaged archival images from Wicked Women, offering a fresh way for queer and trans folk to engage with history. It had a hugely successful run in Sydney. It is on its way to NAMM Melbourne this April, proving that dyke visibility and punk gender fluid community values are just as vital today as they were in the late 80s. Beyond its impact on visibility, Wicked Women also played a powerful role in shaping the mental health and well-being of many readers. At a time when mainstream media ignored or misrepresented lesbians and trans people, publications like Wicked Women validated queer experiences, fostered connection, and provided a sense of belonging. The magazine also embraced sex positivity, celebrating lesbian desire and challenging taboos around queer sexuality. For many, waiting for the next issue was a lifeline, offering affirmation, empowerment, and a space to explore self outside of heteronormative frameworks. We are so thrilled to have Tiger with us today to talk about Wicked Women, the legacy of queer publishing, and what it means to reclaim history for a new generation. Tiger, thanks for being here.
Hello, it's great to be here.
Now, back in 1988, you co-founded Wicked Women, which feels like it must be a lifetime ago, and it became such a defining space for lesbians and for trans people. What was the vision behind that? Because to have that kind of vision so long ago, based on where we need representation to be now, like, it's truly groundbreaking in a way that I could never anticipate.
It is. It's more than 30 years ago now. And basically, it starts with a love story, as all good stories start. So I was 20 when I met Jasper, and I was amazed at how fun dyke sexuality was. And I was amazed that no one had ever told me before, like, how much fun you could have. So my experience of... Well, queer wasn't even a term used then, but my experience of homosexuality or being a lesbian was a character on a TV show called Prisoner. No one was out. Jodie Foster wasn't out. We kind of had, we had icons like Annie Lennox and, you know, like amazing pop stars. Madonna was beginning to strut her stuff. So we had influences, and we definitely had feminism. You know, telling us girls can do anything, you can be whoever you want, but we didn't have representation yet. At the time, dykes were portrayed as hairy, man-hating, and it was kind of true. I didn't not know that many cishet men, and we didn't shave our legs or arms or underarms, but when I looked around at my friends, all I saw was our hotness. And so there's a bit of a disconnect in how we were represented and how we actually were.
Did you think at the time, did you have any idea of the kind of impact that Wicked Women was going to have?
We were definitely ambitious. Like, we had dreams. Jasper and I started the magazine. Well, it was a zine really initially. We photocopied it. And we wanted it to be a forum for discussion. Like, at the time in feminist... inner city circles in Sydney, there was talk that was very policey. Dykes were really policing each other around sexuality, around language. And that is, you know, fundamentally based in something that's good, like a need for change and a need for progress. However, it became a bit stifling, you might say. And so we wanted to push back against that and just claim our sexuality for ourselves and our expression and celebrate it and show it. Like at the time, Dykes kind of went under the radar to avoid stigma, and we wanted to just clear the way for that and de-shame what we were getting up to. So, yeah.
Well, at the time, Wicked Women gave visibility to queer sexuality and sex positivity. Like, those conversations weren't being had at that time. It was, you know, pre-90s. What role do you think Wicked Women played in shaping how lesbians and trans people saw themselves and the relationships that they were in?
We made it much more explicit that we were hot.
I mean, the people need to know.
But yeah, that it's okay to talk about sexuality and it's okay to own it and it's okay to flirt. I mean, we're doing that anyway, but no one was talking about that. It was, you know, discussions literally happened in share houses around things like that penetration was a violent act and that lesbians shouldn't be doing that and dare we ever use a dildo. And like, it was really quite crazy. So yeah, we needed to push back against that stuff.
Well, and I know that many people who are reading the magazine or the zine at the time found it to be a really vital source of connection and affirmation. I mean, of course, you know, pre-1990, definitely no social media. I don't even think like web forums would have been in at the time. Internet would barely have existed unless you're like in the military. So in terms of what this would have done for the community who really didn't have a kind of source of this information and a source for this discourse, how did you see this publication help, you know, the mental health and the well-being of the community?
Oh, it certainly helped in terms of trans representation. Until Jasper came out, of course, there were trans people in the community. Many of our friends were trans femme and trans mask. But no one really was a public figure. And there were reasons for that. Basically, in order to access tea, a person had to say that they'd had to disappear into the suburbs and into heterosexual relationships and leave the queer community. Like, that was the deal then, which is, from our perspective now, absolutely so cruel. And Jasper stood up against that very bravely and gave lots of interviews, and he was on a real mission around awakening people to his transness. And so we definitely made it a safe space for him and for trans folk. And all our events, so the magazine was the catalyst, but then we had parties. Like, we never made any money from the magazine. We had advertisers, but we always just scraped through. And so we started holding events as fundraisers. We got a little bit of support from Mardi Gras, which was pretty amazing. And the parties ended up being really popular, as you can imagine. We had like performances and drag king shows and jelly wrestling, spaghetti wrestling. And yeah, it was a space where people could dress up. And then that evolved into Ms. Wicked, a competition where dykes and women entered to strut their stuff. And so that all, yeah, we were all about creating safe spaces for us to express ourselves and to meet. So I think that had a huge galvanizing effect on the community. They're always really inclusive. So we always had like gay boyfriends come, and they're always trans inclusive. Maybe a few straight men snuck past the door bitch, but it was very much a dyke dominant space.
Tell me a little bit more about Jasper, because you mentioned Jasper a few times now.
Okay, so Jasper was my partner at the time. We met pre-transition, and then he came to the realization that he wanted to medically transition. And I can't really speak for him. I don't want to speak on his behalf. But he was my first love, really. So he always has a place in my heart. And, you know, we made this amazing magazine together. And we were the poster couple, really, for the revolution. But yeah, he was a trailblazer. He's a trans trailblazer. He started a group called Boys Will Be Boys, which was a peer group support for trans masks that was really influential.
I think part of the thing that blows me away about this conversation is that so much of the discussion coming from the people who are transphobic, right? The people who are out to harm the trans community, is trying to paint it as a very recent thing. It's a very new phenomenon that we barely understand, and that it couldn't possibly have existed beyond, you know, 10 years ago when people discovered things on Tumblr. But that's clearly not the case. Now that it's, you know, all this time later, you've had this exhibition that is kind of marrying the past with the future. You know, how do you feel about being so early towards this conversation about the trans community compared to where we are now?
On one hand, I can see the progress that's been made in the community. Like, it's really, really beautiful. I love meeting young trans folk now, and they're a lot more comfy in their skin than we were back in the 90s, and they have a self-acceptance and a community that is really strong, and a language and a lot of support, which is really amazing. But I'm also seeing, as things go in cycles, the need for representation is still there. The need for support, of course, is always there, and for celebration and a focus on the joy that we experience in our friendships. I think that's really key to kind of get back to the grassroots and acknowledge and remember that we all still really need this support. And maybe we need it offline. You asked a question before about the internet. And I think that we were lucky in a way that our communities happened pre-internet. Like, we had a sort of a private public space where we were able to challenge taboos and kind of figure out what we believe, what our values were, and mess up in that. Like, that's a messy experience. But now all of that can happen publicly, and I think that has made people a bit nervous. And also, we've got a lot of censorship happening through Instagram and through social media, which I think curtails self-expression. I mean, we always find a way, right? We find a way underneath those censorship rules, but I think it's really important to come back to analog and face-to-face meetings where we can actually be free of those.
Now, your recent exhibition, we touched on it just a little bit earlier, called Wicked Reboot. It took some of these archival images from the zine and the magazine from way back in the day and then reimagined them through today's lens and today's queer and trans communities. Tell me about the inspiration behind it to revisit those images.
Initially, I reconnected with my crazy, wild, beautiful youth when I visited ACWA, Australian Queer Archives, which holds the Wicked Women archival collection now. And I was flicking through the magazines, and it really, the images just jumped out at me, how much vitality there is in that's comes through our bodies and our eyes and our faces, and how much joy as well. And I just wanted to shout to the rafters and sing from the treetops, "Hey guys, look at us, how beautiful were we?" And so I held an exhibition. So I blew up, with support of ACWA, printed huge versions of the photos, and then had the exhibition here at Pride Centre. And then that was really for my generation. Like, that was about me reconnecting with my generation and the beauty of the past. And I guess a bit of nostalgia for the 90s. But lots of young folk came to the exhibition, and they were super curious. And they were like, "How come we didn't know about this? You got to tell us about our history." And I really got a sense of the yearning for queer history. Like, we don't learn it at school, right?
No.
So we have to actively create it. And I realized I had a responsibility to share my version of my history as best I can with younger folk. So, yeah, so it started out as I thought, let's recreate those vibrant images full of vitality with Gen Zs. But then everyone else kind of got enthralled. I put it a call out on social media, and people of all ages, all genders, and all ethnicities and abilities responded. And I thought that was really interesting as a reflection of the progress that we have had in the community. Like there is much more visibility around ethnicity and around, transness. And so that's reflected in the reboot. So I've got people aged, the youngest is 18 and the oldest is 73.
Wow. Oh, that's so cool. And so the reaction from everyone who's come along to see it so far has been positive by the sound of it?
Yeah, mostly. There's been a few feathers ruffled of people that don't want the past brought up. They're like, no, leave the past in the past. But mostly, especially the younger folk, are just really grateful. They get such a sense of belonging, knowing our history. And I think we all do, actually. It's like, yeah, this is my tribe. These are my people. And that's really important. Like, we need this as an antidote to heteronormative society, which is, you know, just the casual comments. You know, we bear that stuff all day, every day. It's great to have a bit of an antidote of celebration.
Tiger, you've mentioned that dyke visibility is as relevant now as ever. Why do you think that these images from way back in the day still resonate so strongly all these decades later?
I think people are drawn actually to the punk aesthetic, the anti-establishment aesthetic. So in the last decade or so, our progress has given us gay marriage and a level of social acceptance. I mean, it's all kind of falling apart globally. So we have made big gains there, but we also need to reconnect with ourselves and the fact that sexuality isn't sanitized and it isn't something that is clean and neat and shaved and polished. Like, it is messy, and maybe it's still, I don't know, a feminist issue that women aren't allowed to get down and dirty. But of course we do get down and dirty, so it's just a lie. It's just a lie set up by, mainstream society. Yeah, it sets us up for all sorts of trash. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know why dykes aren't really visible. Dykes are very visible in my world. maybe it's your algorithms aren't really set to
dykes. You know what? It very could well be the algorithms. And to your point, you know, Instagram censorship, right? Like, it's going to look for those words that it thinks shouldn't get publication. Maybe that's part of it.
Oh, there's definitely a lot of censorship around queerness on social media. But we've got, like, we've got TV shows like The L Word. There's a lot more lesbian visibility in the media now.
Absolutely. How do you see, let's dive into that a little bit, you know, how do you see the landscape of queer representation in media today compared to, you know, back in 1988?
So in 1988, it wasn't safe for actors to come out. Like, Jodie Foster wasn't even out yet, right? Like, my gaydar's pretty good. Like, and so we read each other. So you kind of knew. But, yeah, no one was outspokenly out. Yeah, the world was very different. It was so stigmatized to be gay then. And, of course, you had the AIDS crisis. So we were literally stigmatized and blamed for that. And it was tremendously unsafe to be out, to be visible. Yeah.
We are chatting with Tiger Salmon, who is one of the co-founders of Wicked Women and is behind the recent exhibition Wicked Reboot, which was a huge success in Sydney. It's on its way to us here in NAR Melbourne in April. How do you see this project evolving over time?
Oh, there's so many more photographs that we could recreate. So that's one option, like that's one direction that we could take. Lots of photographers have approached me and asked me if they could be involved. So, yeah, that could keep evolving that way. I did collect interviews with the models, the contemporary models, and actually the past ones. We had Madison there doing vox pops on the day of the photo shoot. And she got some really beautiful interviews. So it'd be good to do something with those, perhaps make a publication. Yeah, I think dyke, queer, trans culture is really important for us. And it's like, oh, okay, if I want it, I need to actually get out there and create it. So, yeah, that drives me to keep creating.
Talk me through the selection process for choosing which photos you're going to replicate, because I don't know how many photos there must have been in the original publication, but if they've all been saved down at Australian Queer Archives, you must have a litany of them to try and dive through. So how do you narrow that field down?
I flicked through the magazines, and we actually have lots on file at ACWA. And I mean, there's so many really good ones. A lot of them were taken at shows that we did, and so there's a performative aspect to them. And then others were taken in people's bedrooms, and they're a real intimate, domestic kind of private space of authentic relationships. So they're really unstaged, and they're really beautiful in their own right. There are lots of images. So the process was I flicked through and selected a few, and then I printed them out. And so there would have been maybe 50, 60 photos that I printed out. And once people responded to my call out, I kind of matched them up with maybe 5 images. And then they chose. Or some people approached me and said, I know this iconic photograph. I want myself and my lover to recreate this as a way of acknowledging our relationship.
Wow.
So that's pretty beautiful.
That's incredibly special. How did that feel, having that conversation?
It felt just so deeply honouring and like a continuation of a legacy that was really beautiful.
What do you hope this exhibition achieves in the long term?
Oh, I hope that it brings generations together. The intergenerational conversations that have been happening have been really interesting. Like I've had a few particularly young trans folk approach me and say, oh, you know, it's really important for us to meet older trans people. So that's been really good. And, you know, my older trans folk friends are learning a lot from the younger queers. And so I just feel that there's a real healing, actually, a healing kind of vibe happening there. And of course, it's always good to galvanize the community. We really need each other right now. We need to stick together and stand strong.
Absolutely. Well, I know that we were discussing Instagram and their ways that the algorithm can censor queer voices, but credit to them where it's due. Sometimes things manage to break through the algorithm, as this case was with the post by ABC Queer that was all about Wicked Reboot. It went global. It's still going around. What does that tell you about this hunger for the queer punk narratives and gender fluid narratives going around today?
Yeah, for some reason, those images of us in our God jackets, like that has gone global.
For those who haven't seen that photo, what does that look like? Describe it for me.
So it's a photo of, so there was myself, Jasper, Jade, and Jade's girlfriend, Snezna, and we're on our balcony at the house that we lived in, and we're wearing our God jackets. So God was a club that we formed. We had patches with a snake and a sword and the letters G-O-D on it. And we formed it out of fun, really. Well, Jasper wanted to have a gang, and we were always together. We were always out together. So, yeah, it made sense to form a gang. So we had green army jackets with these patches on them. And we looked really, really hot, as you can imagine. And we felt really powerful. Like, we never had any money, so we'd be walking home late from a club or a friend's place late at night. And together it gave us a sense of strength on the streets, which were dangerous for us. But it also gave us a sense of camaraderie and visibly showed our friendship. And I think, so the photographs really show the friendship and the affection and the tenderness. They're really tender, even though we're looking like tough, you know, renegade dykes and trans folk. There is this softness that comes through. And I think the interplay between those is interesting. The contrast between those is interesting. There's a photo where Snezen's applying lipstick on my mouth. And I looked really androgynous, but I loved going out wearing lipstick. And that was not popular amongst dykes at the time for some reason. So it was a protest around femininity and around gender exploration and gender fluidity. And yeah, I don't actually know. I don't know how to answer why those images are so popular, I guess.
Well, what would you say to the next generation of queer and trans creatives? Because obviously they're now looking at what you've done with such adoration and respect. I mean, like, these photos are stunning. And I think given that we're looking at the moment where a lot of things are getting deleted off the internet, a lot of people who were told things are going to stay online forever are finding that those things are disappearing. So archiving our history and those moments that they're experiencing now is becoming more and more critical. So what kind of advice would you give them as they try to carve out their own space in media and art and activism based on what you've learned across your time?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with all of what you just said. Those photographs are just really us documenting our everyday lives. Like, we're literally just standing on the balcony of our house, messing around with lipstick. So, yeah, my advice is to archive your lives. Collect photos, not just online, but in non-digital spaces. Make art, go to protests, make protest banners, make zines, meet in real life. Take photos, keep journals. Like, I kept a visual journal that now gives me such amazing access to myself in my early 20s. And it's the everyday moments that really stand out. Yeah, we were very good at archiving our lives and our thoughts and our conversations and writing about it and recording it.
And now they're literally in the archives, literally in the Australian Queer Archives.
Yeah.
Incredible. Well, Tiger Salmon, it's been so incredible chatting with you today. And the exhibition is coming to NAR Melbourne in April, is that right?
Yeah, the exhibition is on from April 5th to 19th in Melbourne. So, I hope people can get down to Unassigned Gallery if they can in Brunswick. We've got lots of events on. There's an opening night party and artist talks. There's mud wrestling, fundraiser for gender-affirming surgery. And there is also going to be a boot blacking workshop, which will be really gorgeous. We've got an event called Wicked Words, where people share stories from their lives, and a closing party, as well as a life drawing class. So some of the models that feature in the photographs will be there in real life posing.
Wow.
So that's, yeah, it's going to be really beautiful. And all of that in a gallery with 32 photographs on the wall.
Incredible. Tiger Salmon, thanks so much for joining us today on The Latest. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you to our guest, Tiger Salmon, for joining us today. Loved having them here. If this podcast has raised any issues for you, you can contact QLife, which provides Australia-wide anonymous LGBTI peer support and referral for people wanting to talk about a range of issues, including sexuality, identity, gender, bodies, feelings, or relationships. QLife services are completely free and they include both telephone and web chat support delivered by trained LGBTI community members from across the country. Call 1-800-184-527 or visit qlife.org.au to access the web chat. If you've enjoyed this episode, maybe send it to a friend so that they can hear it as well. I know it really helps get the word out there about this podcast, and we've all had someone recommend a podcast to us. Now you get to be the person ahead of the curve recommending the podcast. If you'd like to suggest someone that you think should be on the show, let us know about it. Email info@lgbtiqhealth.org.au and make sure you put the word podcast in the subject line so we know what you're emailing about. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.